No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
Good afternoon, wherever you may be. This is Maria Sanchez. I am the co-host with State Senator Michael D. Brown, or I should call him Shadow Senator Michael Brown, on our program Shadow Politics. Michael is busy doing what politicians do, especially Democrats. He is in Philadelphia as we speak. If he gets an opportunity, he said that he would phone in to visit with us, but not knowing what was going on and what bus he might be on and what the reception was like, we decided to plan without him. So, of course, we're going to miss him greatly. But in his stead, I have invited my former political correspondent, Leslie Cornejo, to be our guest with us this afternoon. When I had my terrestrial radio program, Leslie would visit with us once a week. She is a Ventura County resident for over 30 years, a local business owner. She was the chair of the Ventura County Republican Party for 5 years, delegate and elected secretary of the California delegation to the 2004 GOP convention in New York, and co-founder of California Association of Political Centrists. She currently sits on the board of the Ventura County Fairgrounds. And Leslie, welcome to the program, and thank you for making yourself available.
Thank you. My pleasure, Maria. Nice to talk to you again.
You too, you too, you too. So we have a number to call in, and Doug, if you don't mind throwing that up on the screen, I will share it with our listeners because the senator always does that on our behalf. But I wanted to chat with Leslie not only about the Republican National Convention of last week, but about Senator Secretary Clinton's vice presidential selection, as well as the DNC convention that's opening tomorrow in Philadelphia. So for our listeners, the phone number is, thank you, Doug, 888. It's funny, it came up and now it's gone. Let's see. Here we go. No, not showing. So it'll come back up again. So anyway, Leslie, let me know, first of all, your thoughts about the RNC last week, what your thoughts were. And I'll throw out some numbers when we have the opportunity, because the fourth night was the most watched night, as that might make sense, because that was when the coronation occurred. But what are your thoughts, Leslie?
Well, having attended a convention before, it just sent me into flashbacks. Mm-hmm. So you kind of relive it as you go through it, because you know that as you're watching it, what all is going on behind the scenes. There are just a myriad of discussions, connections being made behind the scenes. Everybody's there for the party. You know, they always just go over the top to make it fun for everyone, because the purpose of a convention anyway is to come out of there excited for your cause, or, you know, any convention, your business or whatever. They want you charged up and ready to go as you leave. So it certainly looks like the Republican convention was able to do that. They had their, you know, spits and sputters in a couple of places, but I think largely it was a very well handled, well done, and they managed to dodge a lot of issues that, boy, it sure looks like right now, even as we speak, things are really brewing over in Philadelphia.
So, what, of course, the biggest flap, I think, was Mrs. Trump's speech and lifting some of the words from Mrs. Obama's speech, and then Ted Cruz's non-endorsement or unendorsement, if you will, of Donald Trump, and then Mike Pence's speech, and then Donald Trump's speech. I think to me those were the four biggest things that came out. So do you want to talk about what your thoughts are about what Mrs. Trump's speech and the lifted words?
You know, I think that was a novice faux pas. She probably should have had people on top of it reviewing it. And she, from what I understand from the story, I have to trust the story, she said, this is the kind of thing that I want to say. It was paraphrased so closely that it really was practically the same portion of the speech, though mm-hmm. the rest of the speech was hers. So I think she can be forgiven somewhat herself, but I still think she still has to take responsibility, and the campaign does as well. You know, they probably should have been paying better attention and should have known better as well, just to watch out for those kinds of things. You know, you're under the microscope by millions of people. You better have it right.
So along those lines, I'm in school at Pepperdine, as I think you know, Leslie, mm-hmm. and I am unavailable to watch television because I'm in class in afternoons and evenings. However, on the way back from campus, depending on the time that my classes were getting out, I was able to hear some of the convention. I did hear her speech in its entirety on the radio as I was coming back. And so the next day when a girlfriend says to me, she plagiarized the whole speech from Michelle Obama. And I said, wait a second, she talked about her European upbringing and her parents. And then she talked about coming to America and becoming a citizen. And that wasn't from Michelle Obama's speech. Like, so I was scratching my head. So my girlfriend says, Google it. So I did. And what I did see is that 7% of the speech was very similar to Michelle Obama's.
Right.
And that was talking about making America great and loving our husbands and what have you. So verbatim, it wasn't plagiarized, if you will.
No. It was pretty close, though, on those passages, though. It was the phrase, the word being your bond, was the thing that I think raised eyebrows as far as being so close. Now, those aren't words that are owned by anybody, but
right.
But they did inspire her, but she should have probably thought of a maybe different way to say it, or her speechwriter, who fessed up, and they still
right.
support anyway, but... you know, so it did create a dust up, and it's a shame for that. But I it might cause her to think twice before she does a lot of public appearances if she's going to be scrutinized to that degree. But politics is ugly, and she, and I'm sure she's seen it already. Now she got a dose of it herself, too, unfortunately.
Which I understand was one of the reasons that she has stayed out of the limelight, spotlight,
right.
pretty much thus far.
Yep.
But even being a student, they have this whole thing about plagiarism. So there is a software that I run all of my papers through that
mm-hmm.
will say whether or not you've lifted something too much or in its
right.
entirety or whatever. And I always come out with 100% because they grade you on
mm-hmm.
what. The one time I didn't, it came out, it said that I had lifted 8 words from another source. So I went back to find out what those 8 words, and they were my notes from my professor from his words that came out of his mouth. So I kept them because I thought, I didn't plagiarize that. I was writing down what he said, and
right,
maybe
right.
what he said was lifted. So there was no problem with that.
And you got to figure that a speechwriter that has that official job should be watching that. So, I don't think that this is a horrible criminal act. I think it was a misstep that, of course, you have to be very careful these days in the media. The slightest little misstep, and, you've got people watching everywhere, and they'll jump on it. So you just have to be better, more careful in things like that. So, but she
right.
really took a beating for it, probably more than deserved. But the speechwriter really should have probably used that same program.
Right, exactly. And I understand that that woman came forth and said that she wanted to resign, and Donald Trump said, forget about it.
Right,
exactly. It was a misstep, which I happen to appreciate.
Yeah.
So then let's go to Ted Cruz's speech, which I also heard on my way home from class. And as he's talking, I'm going, okay. All right. It's not your agenda. Let's get on with it. And then when I realized that it wasn't forthcoming, that's right when I heard the boos.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, other people are discontented too.
Yeah, he was pretty much booed off the stage at the end when people realized that, really, Trump didn't need to allow him to speak, and he did.
Right.
And already knowing what the speech was going to be, and that showed a certain amount of either confidence or, hey, whatever. You do have to look at the other side. What would happen if I didn't let him speak? He's going to take all the flack for it, for not allowing Cruz to speak after having so many supporters there. So he took a little bit of a gamble there and figured, what harm will there be even if he doesn't endorse me? Because I can always beat him up for it. I'm sure that was the thought process. So then the Cruz did that, and he took there are so many people that were dismayed by that, because the idea of this convention, as far as what is at stake, is the presidency, is your party, and that's what you're there for. So,
right.
You know, he took a deserved beating, I think, you know, for that one, and had his say, felt very and behaved very righteously on that. But I always say myself, as I went through all these political years that I was so active, that, you know, parties can actually purge themselves or purify themselves into oblivion, you know. So you have to have the ability to rally. Politics does force people to compromise, and those who refuse to compromise make it very difficult for parties to move forward and win. Because if you don't win, you don't have a seat at the table, and then you're nothing. So you just have to get through and find ways to make your say, steer things your direction, but you can't have it all. You just can't in politics.
Well, and my thought was, if he, Ted Cruz, wasn't going to raise a glass and clink a toast, then he shouldn't have come.
Right.
He should have done what Marco Rubio did and the two Bushes did, or the three Bushes, really, I guess you could say, the 41, 43, and Jeb. They didn't show up, and I actually have more respect, and how many others, Mitt Romney, et cetera. Then just, you know, don't go and do what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Don't go.
Yeah.
So,
you know, if you're going to do public damage to the showcase of your party, and, you know, he may think that, you know, that he's going to win the long-term argument, but he doesn't have enough friends. You know, he has to learn to make connections and make alliances, or else you don't win anyway. So people see that he's just, you know, I've forgotten who said, I think it was Charles Krauthammer who said it was the longest suicide speech he'd ever, political suicide speech he'd seen ever. And it's likely so. You know, who's going to fundraise for you? You know, who's going to rally around you? One of his, a bunch of his former supporters are saying, you know, I don't know if I'd support him next time after what he's done.
Right.
Not a
and
team player.
I'm glad to hear that. So we do have Senator Brown and Kathleen Gomez on the line. Welcome to Shadow Politics. Good afternoon, evening to you both.
Hey, thanks, Maria. Thanks for doing the show. We're on our way to downtown Philadelphia for the Democratic convention. I came back from the Republican convention on Friday, and that's my nap system. We're on our way down to the Welcome Party delegation, but we just want to call in and tell you that next week we're going to have a great show. We're going to go over all this stuff. What do you want to say, Kathleen?
The Russians are coming.
Kathleen's trying to be funny, which is...
they're claiming that the Russians hacked into the DNC server and got all the emails about how Wasserman was not ever neutral, which we all know she wasn't. And, you know, I'm a little bit of a critical against the Democratic Party, because I've thought for a long time that they've really not played the role that they're supposed to, which is just neutral. And
so
it's interesting that they're blaming the Russians for hacking into the email so that they will help Trump.
And Leslie, you should know as a backstory, Kathleen Gomez was Senator Brown's co-host, and then I stepped into her huge shoes. But she's a Hispanic, independent, former Democrat voting for Donald Trump.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, so that makes a great debate in your vehicle there.
In other words, she's crazy, which is why she's not the co-host anymore. So that's what Maria left out. And we also, I want Jim to say hello. We have Jim Zubar in the back seat, who's a delegate. Jeff, tell us what you feel about being a delegate.
Just great to be here in Philadelphia. We're going to have a very uplifting convention, to strike a big contrast to what the Republicans did. America doesn't need to be made great again. America's already great. That's what we want to show.
Yeah, but we're not getting off to a good start, but we're going to do it.
Okay. Well, I'm so happy that you all were able to call in. Thank you so much. Anything you want to add about what the scene is like there?
I'm sorry you had to compete with the NAV system and everything else, but I'll see you next week, Maria, and thanks
okay,
everybody
Senator.
For listening. Look for us on TV. We'll be the guys in the handcuffs.
Okay.
Have a blast.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. Look forward to the program on next Sunday. So Kathleen is a really interesting story because she was really active in the Democratic Party. Then she got disenfranchised. She lived in Arizona, worked in a hospital that had so many illegal immigrants that availed themselves of the services that the hospital went out of business because they couldn't afford to do that anymore. So that was then her shift to the independent. And then she became a Trump supporter a couple months ago. So she's a real interesting story.
Full big circle to make.
Yeah.
Super interesting. But, you know, and as the discussion says, of course, I'm coming more from a, you know, conservative point of view. And to me, the convention and, well, we were going to talk about Trump's speech anyway. That was the last thing. It was being characterized as being dark, and it really was just, I felt, you know, laying out the case of all of the people's griefs that they have over what they want changed, such as those types of issues. You know, it has to be fixed. Something's got to be done. And then to say, you know, I'm going to go out there and fight for you to make these changes. So, you know, Trump's been, his whole thing has been channeling some of the frustration and angers that people have, that things that they are worried about or care about aren't being addressed. And so that's who he was channeling, I think, really. So I don't see it as so dark. I could see from a Democratic point of view, though, that it would be very negative because it's largely negative towards their policies and what has been happening. And they, it's going to be a very, very interesting election to see really who feels that things are okay and who things needs think that things need to be changed. So,
well, I just statistically, the viewers for the first day were 23 million, the second day 20 million, the third day 23 million, and then the fourth day over 32 million.
Wow.
So it did galvanize lots of interest.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really, really liberal buddy of mine who was in Washington, D.C. He actually was a guest at Katherine Graham's house four times for dinner back in the day. He prepped Clarence Thomas for his Supreme Court hearing, and then he came to Hollywood and became a really fabulous, successful comedy writer for television shows going way back to Taxi. But we've always just agreed to disagree about politics, and he calls me Sanchez, and he says, you know, Sanchez, one of these days, as you gain more wisdom, you're going to come to our side. And I said, I am all about socially liberal causes. I'm just fiscally conservative. So I understand the need to give people fish, but I understand the greater need is to teach them to fish. And he said, well, you and I don't disagree there then. And I said, my folks have a house that's a Section 8 house. There are three generations of baby mamas there, the grandmother, the daughter, the granddaughter, and their five children. And they've been there for years and years and years. That's created a climate of dependency. Why would they want to make any changes? They are happy and fine just as they are. And he said, well, I actually agree with you on that. And I was like, huh, maybe there is more common ground than we seem to know.
I actually believe in that anyway. That's actually why I was so active a few years ago on putting together a group of political centrists, because I really feel that that's where the debate can be, because there are so many issues that we agree on. You know, it's all theater and excitement when you square off in the two major parties, because that's how you get elected. It's nearly impossible to go anywhere else. So far it has been impossible to go anywhere else and get elected. And so we have this two-party system that have been so drawn to their extremes politically by their activists that a large bunch in the middle don't feel like they're part of the debate and very often agree. And I just, myself, I talk a lot about my opinion, if you give them a chance there, is that most people do have that large common agreement, and when you see the candidates, it's who scares them the least. So, you know, which is very interesting this time because of all of the issues and personalities on both sides. It's just going to be fascinating to watch all of this because, you know, they badmouth the character of Trump, but he's used to saying outrageous things in business because that's how you negotiate. You mm-hmm. start off with crazy off-the-wall stuff, and then you come down to the rational negotiation and agreement in the middle. And then all of this stuff that's been going on the other side with Hillary Clinton, because she has such a long history in public service that she has so many things that people can point at to argue with. And so it's, you know, who knows where it's going to end up, because we really are almost a 50-50 country that just sways with that big middle as far as who they feel they can identify with the most.
But ironically, it's always the fringe of both the left and the right that seem to dominate and dictate. That's what I don't understand.
Well, and that's why we ended up this year with Trump and Sanders. I mean, in my opinion, both parties, I mean, out of 17 candidates that on one side that most people said, oh, you know, so-and-so was, you know, I prefer this one or this one or this one, and, well, okay, we have Trump. And on the other side, people said, well, it was just kind of this preordained thing that it was going to be Hillary. And both sides were frustrated, and so the candidates that threw grenades were the ones that get the attention. So, you know, and that's who people are following because they feel that it's in such a lockdown. The whole system, I don't say rigged. I know they like to, but I think Sanders and Trump use that. I don't like that term so much, but it really is so overly controlled and in lockdown by the existing bureaucracies and candidates and legislators that don't want to leave where they are. And so they play it safe, and nothing gets done. And that's why the public is so frustrated. So that's my
opinion. My question, too, is that I know it's a trend here in California, but I don't know about the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. People are getting so disenfranchised, they're moving to the decline to state.
Right. Those numbers are rising. Nationwide, yes, but largely or very much so in California. The last statistics I saw for the Republicans, I think they were at 33% or so, just abysmal. So, you know, which is why Republicans, when they work for their candidates, they love their candidates, they walk their precincts and they lose, they say, why? Because they were such a good candidate. Because you have to look at the registration numbers also. And you have to look at the district. You know, and statewide, you've got to appeal to that broad middle or you don't have a chance.
Well, and here we in California, for the rest of our listeners who don't live in the state, we have the top two vote getters in the primary going to November. So we have two Democrats that we get to choose from for senator.
Right, right.
And that's the first time ever.
Yep. And so it's... Yeah, and the theory behind that when it was passed was the fact that you kept having a candidate from each end of the party, and you always have extreme candidates. Whereas if you have the possibility of maybe two from one party, it would draw, people would have the chance perhaps to look at one who's a little more of a centrist and maybe broader appeal.
That didn't happen.
No. Well, it's an experiment, and you know, different elections. It helps in some, doesn't in others. So, but that was the original idea of that years back. Anyway, so.
And we've got Kamala Harris, who was just mm-hmm. endorsed by not only the president but by the vice president of the United States, and then Loretta Sanchez.
Right. Right.
Those are our two choices. So let's go to Senator Tim Kaine.
Right.
What are your thoughts about her selecting him?
It certainly seemed like the safe choice, and it certainly seems as though the Clinton campaign is looking for someone who can win Virginia because they're afraid of losing Virginia. So and he's won countless elections in Virginia, so he knows how to win Virginia. So that's big for them to be able to plan or hope to put that one in their column. But it certainly PO'd an awful lot of the Sanders people that would be my interest in finding out that calculation from Clinton, because what happens is they may not go to Trump, but they may stay home. And mm-hmm. when you have voter suppression, that's just as bad as the get out the vote for the campaign. So I wonder if they just felt that, no, they'll vote for us anyway, or we'll just go, we'll get enough votes or cobble together enough votes elsewhere. Because, of course, many of the Sanders people would still stay with the party. But they're going to lose some.
I thought it was curious that she picked somebody who's a rank and file career politician.
Yes, yes.
So that goes right into the hand of Trump's thing that it's rigged and it's crooked and it's all these insiders. And rather than her picking, let's say, a Hispanic or a person of color, I understand why she didn't pick Elizabeth Warren. That's too much of the same. You already. You know, I don't see that she was going to bring anything to the table.
Right.
And I guess because Kane is fluent in Spanish, that's helping somewhat because apparently he broke into Spanish several times yesterday.
Yeah, I saw him. So, and you speak Spanish, don't you, Maria? Because I do, too.
Comprendo más que hablar.
Yeah, yo también. But there's a limit to how much people can stand to listen to that unless he's speaking only to Hispanic groups, which probably is going to be his role. He's probably going to be rallying, not his soul in entirety, but I'm sure that's what he's going to be doing because there are people that are so frustrated over some of Trump's rash statements about broad brushing Hispanics, which he should never have done because he can get away with that in business, but you can't in politics. And
well,
he may not have meant it, but he just can't do it.
But to me, it's just like, there you go. You got a white middle-aged man, career politician. There's no stab at diversity, no stab at thinking outside the box, no stab at I really am forward-thinking, progressive, and liberal, so I'm going to take a leap here. I would assume there are plenty of choices in the Democratic Party that meet those criteria.
I can't think
of anybody off the top of my head, but I'm sure they are.
Yeah, she went for the safe person, and that's just all about political strategy of looking at the counts of which states that she can get with him. But I think, again, that's going to create more of that. It'll kill enthusiasm for a lot of people for this election on the Democratic side. And I think because the argument will be, do you want more of the same? And more, more inside the beltway, more same old, or do you want to go and take a chance at someone that some people might think is a little crazy sometimes, but would at least shake things up in Washington, which I think the majority of people really feel that things need to be shaken up. I was surprised. When I saw that choice, I thought, well, that was just a very safe, comfortable type of a choice, but it doesn't look like it was bold and exciting, and I thought she needed that.
I couldn't agree more. So on that note, what about Mike Pence? What are your thoughts about him?
Same thing for Trump, but Trump, his is the reputation for being the out there kind of sometimes on the border of crazy as far as his statements. So he needed to balance his ticket personality-wise.
I agree.
But I don't see that's a personality balance between Clinton and Kane. So that's less exciting as far as that. Pence should be able to rally and speak to some of the farther right wing of the party and make them more comfortable with the vote. So Trump balanced the ticket that way also. A lot of times you end up with political enemies on the ticket, but they need to balance based on what states you're going after or what you're trying to project as far as a balance of your either knowledge Trump may be all about getting jobs, creating jobs. That's what he does, is build things and create jobs. But having someone who's been on the foreign policy in Congress with that experience is probably a good balance for him, too.
Well, I did happen to hear his acceptance speech, too, Governor Mike Pence, and when he talked about he needed to balance the ticket in terms of personality because he's kind of boring sort of thing, which I thought was cute. But I was thinking, wouldn't it have been magical if he had chosen somebody like Dr. Ben Carson?
Yes. Yep.
Then you're talking two outsiders, and you're talking a man of color, and you're talking because Dr. Carson endorsed Trump earlier on also. Right. So he was already in on the machine. It wasn't like he would have to be converted or like, say, a Marco Rubio or something
It's so true. However, the only thing is he is more like Trump in that he's more willing to say things just off the top of his head that have to be answered for later, and to have two people like that running around campaigning is a little harder to control. So as much as he's beloved and is a great man, he's harder to, they both would be like that. So they'd be putting out fires all the time.
Okay. That's a really good point. We got two loose cannons firing.
Right, exactly.
who's taking care of the home front? So Leslie, let's go into your background. And what created your activism? Because I know you come from generations.
Yeah, my folks were not very political, but they were Wyoming Republicans, which was Alan Simpson type Republicans, which is stay out of my life, limited government, conservatism, financial conservatism, more so. And more of a, how Wyoming is. I grew up in Wyoming. My first years were in Wyoming. So when we moved to California, my folks eventually got involved in local politics. And so my mom was pretty active in the Republican Party, and I helped her with some of her fundraisers, and found myself one night watching television, with my fist raised, saying, "Who are you talking to? you're my party, but I'm not relating to you today. Please, just do you understand what kind of message?" Because I was just frustrated. And again, it's probably all of that same thing. The 20 years ago, it's the same thing. They're not relating to the person on the street and how their policies, and that's government in general. So I stepped into. I had a little taste of it through my folks, and got involved in the local central committee and fought the battles there locally, and ended up being the county chair for about 5 years. And during that time, got to go to the convention in New York, which was just an awesome, awesome experience. And I get very excited for any of the delegates who get to go on for either party, just because it's just really amazing. You see, it's just you're cutting edge in policy, in politics, in fun, in entertainment. It's just all there. When we went as Californian delegation in New York, I distinctly remember one night when we were all going to give our nomination and our say and pledge our delegates, that someone had the idea of running out and getting sunglasses for everybody in the delegation. So, you have the cowboy hats for the Texans, but suddenly you had all the Californians standing on our chairs in sunglasses. So,
funny.
So it's fun things like that. It's serious business in the end, but it's a convention, and you make it fun, too. So, but it's all very, very exciting to be involved and frustrating as well. You find out that just because you have a great idea or you have a great candidate doesn't mean you always win. You have to be very careful and calculating about what district you're in, your message, does the candidate match the district, and all of that. So I learned an awful lot, learned a whole lot being involved in all that. So,
well, I've run a couple of campaigns local, and I had the privilege, actually, of attending a campaign management school that the National Federation of Republican Women offered at their convention many years ago. And it was a 3-day class. And I don't know that I learned a lot exactly, because I've been involved in campaigns since high school, but it was a coalescing of all the information in, like one breath sort of thing that really brought it home to me. But you're right. The thing about campaigns is anything can happen, and the best person doesn't always win.
It
can get dirty, and that's the part that disappoints me, I think, the most.
Oh, yeah, it's really ugly business. You have to respect so much anyone that is willing to get into it and be able to take that, and also for the families to watch the candidates, I think is even harder than the candidates, because the candidates have already agreed to do this thing, but the families to watch what they have to go through is pretty rough and tumble, as they say, so...
And what's something that I noticed that we've come a long way, baby, is that nobody has talked about the fact that Donald Trump has been married 3 times.
Right, right.
I mean, that used to be blasphemous. Like,
oh, yeah.
I was asked, David Horowitz, not the guy who does for products, that's one, but the other one, the former communist, now Republican.
Right, the Chicago guy. Who wrote books, who became a conservative, right?
Yes. I met him professionally because I interviewed him on a couple of times when he published a book, and then I got to know him through the party. And he called me once, this is probably 15 years ago, and asked me, had I ever considered running for office? And I said, excuse me? I had him say it 3 times. And he finally said, what the hell, Maria? Do you not speak English? And I was like, David, do you know that I've been married more than once? And he said, what does that have to do with anything? And I said, everything, doesn't it? Because at that time, that was a no-brainer. You had to have one and only spouse that stared adoringly and glowingly.
Mm-hmm. the world has changed quite a lot. You know, I really do believe that, and I think for the better, because then they're more willing to look really at who you are and who you are now, and maybe through the whole process of all the your life experiences, good and bad, have made you who you are. You know, I believe in redemption, and I believe in people, you know, who have that in them, that they've done some things they weren't proud of and they want to change that. And so you can't completely judge them by things they did in the, you know, in their crazy youth days.
Right. Right. And that I find refreshing, having not have the marital success that you have had, that which I'm not proud of, but that's now not part of the litmus test.
Right, right. No, it's a great thing, I think, too, and I think it's helping women as well in that too, because, you know, it would be hard to say, you know, if there were if Mrs. Clinton, if Senator Clinton or Secretary Clinton, I guess you always called it by their latest title.
Title, right.
I once learned that about an ambassador. Once you're an ambassador, you're always an ambassador. Mm-hmm. Whether you're retired or not, that's their title. Uh-huh. But if it were Secretary Clinton to have been married 3 times mm-hmm. before. Now, being that she's a woman, I wonder if that would matter more than for Trump. So...
That's a good point. I'm sure there is a double standard, but because the bar has a new, I don't know if you want to say height or
yes,
sunk.
Yes, I think so.
Well, I think it's going to imbue other candidates to be able to move forward that might not have their marital closets in order.
Right, right.
Even in Los Angeles with the mayor, not Garcetti, but his predecessor, Villagrosa, he had that a little... ugly blemish there for a while with, I guess it was a extramarital affair, but it seems, I'm not saying that that's a good thing. I'm just saying that it's nice to know that maybe some more people who have some stumbles and falls might be able to have an opportunity to be considered, whereas before it would have been a deal breaker.
Right, right. Yeah. So it's changing and you know, the world and the culture doesn't change overnight, you know. So and sometimes laws passage are still catching up. And I can say that, for example, as part of Trump's speech the other night when he was speaking about gays and how the room cheered. And that was part of his speech, but then he stopped and he paused and he said, I'm really happy to hear you cheer. Because I don't know that he would have expected that. And I think maybe even in recent years it might not have happened. So it shows how the world is changing, and which is a wonderful thing. It's just that not everybody changes the same day, the same week. It just takes time for people to get used to new things and not feel that it's a threat. So,
to that end, about the Republican Party platform, including marriage and abortion, right. When do you think that is going to get jettisoned? Because that holds us back.
You know, what's interesting is that both platforms are extreme, and yet the candidates are not. And so it's almost as if they say, okay, so we have our platform, but yeah, sure. Look at the candidate and what they portray. So, and there are these huge battles over the platform. And then once you get through the convention, aside from the fact that most people don't pay attention to the platform unless it's being used as a tool by the other party. Mm-hmm. Well, your platform says this. Where do you stand? Do you agree with your party or not? You know, and so I really, again, it's just used as a tool against each other in the battle. But in the end, I don't think it matters that much.
Well, because my understanding is that when the Democrats took the death penalty out of their platform, that that opened up a whole bigger audience for them because people were polarized by that.
Right, right.
And I see that Republicans too.
Well, and I think that, interestingly, I did a bit of studying about this. Many women left the Republican Party over the choice issue. And they didn't become independents. They went all the way over because they liked to join, and they joined the Democratic Party. Whereas men, when they leave their party, they tend to be more independent. So that independent middle is mostly, it's about two-thirds male. So when, for example, and I'll go back to the choice thing and the platform, but
please,
when you have Trump and Hillary selecting men, you know, safe men that may attract some of those independent people in the middle. So that may be part of their thinking as far as who they're trying to draw towards their side. But I think you and I have always agreed that the Republican Party would do so much better were it allowed to have a more open platform on the choice issue, because that is the yardstick that many women use. Regardless of all other issues or policies, that's what they use as a whether they will join the Republican Party or not, is that issue only. And it's difficult because, you know, it's always a very difficult and a personal issue, and I wish the party would allow it to be. You know, regardless of choice or not, I never wake up. I'm 60. I will confess, I don't wake up every morning worrying about that issue. But I worry every day about jobs for my kids and my grandkids.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I wish people would look at in the whole perspective and the whole package, and be allowed to understand that that's an important issue, but it's not the only issue. So single issue voters will not go to the Republican Party on the choice issue. But if they have other issues, they will. And likewise, the other direction for the Democrats.
And I guess things as we get older, you could call it wisdom, but I call it nuanced. Life isn't black and white anymore as it once was when I was this young Catholic Republican mother.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now that I've grown older and lived,
yeah,
not just in theory, but in reality, I think my personal choice shouldn't be imposed upon another regarding choice, as you so eloquently put it.
Yeah.
And what I feel as a person shouldn't obstruct another person from doing something that they may need to do that I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
And that's where I've swung the other way, is that I used to be pro-life and now I am pro-choice.
Yeah.
It's not my decision to make. I can make that decision for me. But I do find it a little odd that if a pregnant woman is killed, it's a double homicide.
Yeah, it's such a difficult issue to discuss because it has so much to do with health. It's so both politically and emotionally charged, and I really wish that is why that it would be the type of a decision that is made between an individual, their family, their healthcare people, and the people, their support system, being it their church or whatever their support system is, that they would be making those types of decisions. Because certainly, in my opinion, to have to make that choice is not something to be celebrated.
Whether you have the right to or not,
it is a tragedy that someone
yes.
would have to make that kind of a decision, and therefore, that's why I hate to have it out on banners. you know, it really should, but aside from the fact that it really, I feel that people really should be allowed to work through these things personally, on a more personal basis, instead of have it be this big national campaign that, that blots out any other issue, you know? So.
Yeah. It's, and the women that I know that have had abortions that have shared that with me, it was one of their darkest hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, they wish they hadn't been in that position. They wish they didn't have to do it. They wish that they didn't. There's regret there, but it was for them at the time, it was essential. It was the lesser of the evils. It was what they felt they needed to do. But the point is, they had a choice.
Yeah, yeah, and again, I just, it's to me that's why I have a difficulty with that part of the platform with the Republican Party, because my view is less government interference with individual issues, and in, you know, you must defend people's civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that when you have individual tragedies and issues like this, that we shouldn't be so hard on individual people just suffering through these decisions. You know. So
now let's talk about guns. Where do you stand on that?
On which?
On the gun control and the measures that seem to want to pop up that Paul Ryan's not allowing.
Okay. I have to tell you, I have, in my whole family, I have people that will never touch a gun, never want to see a gun, and I have family members that are pro-gun, NRA, Second Amendment. It's their only issue. That's what they vote on. Mm-hmm. And as usual, I tend to see both sides, and I'm in the middle. I want mm-hmm. people to have the right to defend themselves. I don't know that you need to have all of those, all that weaponry out there without any control over it. So, but it just seems to me that we always argue one end or the other instead of finding some kind of rational controls to keep at least people that might be dangerous from having them. But I don't know. It's a very difficult problem. I don't know how do you pick who's the dangerous one until they crack? You know?
Assault weapons probably nobody needs to have.
Yeah.
And then I've been thinking more about the no fly, no buy, which kind of makes sense to me too. Mm-hmm, if you mm-hmm. are on an FAA watch list, then you probably shouldn't have a gun.
Right. Right.
I mean, there's a reason that you're on that list, and mm-hmm, it doesn't mm-hmm. look good. So,
right.
I mean, some of those things to me make common sense. Now, my dad's NRA. I was raised with guns. He has more guns than I can count. I've never had a gun. My dad taught us how to be sharpshooters. He was a marksman, but I've never held a gun since. That's been decades ago. But again, I don't want to deny somebody the right to have one, but I don't think it needs to be an assault rifle. Or assault weapon.
Yeah. I grew up in a house where, you know, my dad was a farmer, and they grew up, you know, with a rifle in their hands, you know, before they were 10, because they were out shooting gophers out
right.
on the farm.
Right.
And then, you know, I married someone from another country, South America, that did not allow, that's not a country, I know, but from South America, where they didn't believe in, the public was not allowed to have a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would you have a gun? So we didn't have guns, and so at first I said, okay, we won't have any guns or toy guns in my house, so we'll just see how that goes. And so I had a son when he was maybe 2 years old at the table in his high chair chewing a piece of toast into a gun and going, pachoo, 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 because it's everywhere. You know, so, you know.
I had the same thing. My sons took toilet paper rolls and paper towel rolls and made guns out of
right.
it.
Right. So
when I saw
there,
that,
you,
I
you
relented
can't avoid
and bought
it.
The pot.
Yeah.
What are the guns where they you put the coils of the, that they snap? They make a smell and a sound.
Oh, yeah, the cap guns?
Cap guns. So I relented and got them that.
Yeah.
But they never went through the cowboys and Indian phase, and
yeah,
I know it's
yeah.
Native
well,
Americans.
And so it's very, you know, it's out there, and I absolutely believe that, you know, I think that probably we have enough laws if they're enforced properly. And I think that's, I tell people when I'm supporting a candidate, I said, I'll always tell them, would you please, when you go to whatever house or legislation, you know, whatever building you're going to do legislation, that whenever you pass a law or promote a law that you find two that you can remove, because we're just so bogged down by so many rules and laws that we just don't have the freedoms that we have to. And I think that if we just could simplify some things, you know, and the fact that we have more civil rights, and that seems to be become getting better and better as far as individual civil rights, that's less of a battle, so we can have rational discussions about the other things that we do. So so I just feel that I don't know that we need more laws. We need some good enforcement and the ability, which means, you know, you have to have a bureaucracy and you have to have the cops on the street to enforce the laws that you've got also. So you need to give them that support if you're going to start more laws about it. So,
well said. So that's why we get along so well, because yeah. We're so, in my estimation,
I miss chatting with you. It's been a while.
Very, very rational. And then let's talk about the world stage. It seems mm-hmm. that the violence, it's almost daily. It's all I can do. I'm still old school. I subscribe to the newspaper. I read it every day, cover to cover. Mm-hmm. And I almost weep now every day mm-hmm. over what's the latest atrocity. The yeah. latest suicide bomber, the latest random gunman. And for it to be in Europe now, which the average Joe doesn't have a gun there, they never have, is that must be so scary for them.
Yeah. How do they protect themselves when they see something like that happen? So you can see our rationale for having guns to protect ourselves, though you never know if it actually would help or not, but at least, you know, and people are fearful, and I think there's a lot of fear. And that's, right now there's a lot of fear out there, therefore a lot of people want guns. I think there is still a lot of international malaise because we haven't recovered from all the economic problems that we were hit with almost 8-9 years ago. And for all the minor improvements we've made, there's still a lot of problems out there, still a lot of young people that don't have jobs. So they don't have hope. And so it's this lack of hope, this lack of productivity. It's hard. It's not good for your soul. And there's just, I don't want to sound too dark either, because I'm tend to be kind of a Pollyanna myself. Mm-hmm. It'll get better. It has to get better. but I just do think that right now there's just so much fear in the world and not enough strength in positive ways. And we can take responsibility to a point from our own country, but I think that other countries need to step up also. And I think we need a lot stronger leadership and alliances to make things better, because, people, they don't treat each other as well when they're afraid of each other, or afraid of not having a job, or afraid of it compounds on itself.
Well, Leslie and I live in Southern California. Listeners, if you're new, we're visiting with Leslie Cornejo, and we're in the middle of a heat wave. It's blistering. It's over 100 degrees for days now. And I've noticed that people are cranky.
Yeah.
And it's the funniest thing. And so it's little things like that. So what you were talking about, the lack of or loss of hope, that's something within the spirit. And then you talk about something external like heat. Well, of course, if heat can make that reaction, imagine what the loss of hope creates.
That's right. You know, it's funny. I will tell my dad, because he'll get so angry, because they're part of the great generation that made things so much better for the world, and they left it in better shape after World War II, we can't pry it out of their hands either, but they're just so strong about that. And he'll come and he'll just, gripe and be so angry, and the world's going to hell in a handbasket. And I said, never say that in my house, ever. Because my kids need hope. My kids need to be told that they can be trusted to handle their future and the world. And so that's always my message for them. Sometimes in the back room I think, oh, my God. But but I think that we have to learn to trust the crazy young kids and all of that, and also create a world where they can thrive. And right now it's tough. You know, our kids are having
tough.
A tough time, I think.
It is tough.
They're all wonderful people, and it's just a tough world out there, I think, for them. And I just want everybody to – and that's why it's so crucial, I think, when you look at these elections. These young people are frustrated, and the older people are frustrated because they think that what they created is already gone, and they want to, you know, and they want to fix it. And so everybody's mad, you know.
Yes.
So it's going to be a crazy election season, I think, because of that.
I do, too.
So.
I do, too. And I'm really looking forward to the ride, even though I might be, like, holding my breath and white-knuckling it.
Yep.
Because you know that some unexpected and unanticipated events are going to unfold on both sides.
Right.
And, well, and at the end of the day, on November 8th at midnight, I guess, the people will have spoken. Whomever it is, it's the great American process, and we have to trust the process. And that's why I admire you so much, is because, like me, you've not just had an opinion, but you've gotten involved. Because it's not just about voting either, which that's a lot of it, but it's about trying to make a difference. And sometimes
and
we're successful,
like the outcome,
and sometimes
then you better get better involved next year. You know,
exactly.
And I've talked to that about people on both sides, both parties, who say, how did we end up with these candidates that we have? And I said, you know what? Next time you better be a little more involved if you're not happy, because that's how you get them. Is the activists, the he who has the most activists, are the ones that are going to win it. And so you got to have, you got to get out there. You got to get involved. Don't sit at home. I am always willing to accept the results of an election if people are involved. And
me too.
And they are informed. And then, because they all make their decisions based on their own experience, and a lot of them have different experiences, so I can trust that. I can live with that. As long as they're not just taking the knee-jerk, who do I vote for kind of thing from somebody else, you know?
Perfect. Leslie, we're out of time. I want you to promote your business, Santa Paula Travel.
Oh, yes. I have a travel agency in Santa Paula, California, Santa Paula Travel. That's my real job, but love to talk politics anytime I'm given the chance.
And
Leslie,
I thank
you for that,
Maria. So much. I really appreciate you taking this time out of your day.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been really fun catching up with you, too.
You too. And continued success. And to our listeners, Senator Brown will be back with us next week after his time in Philadelphia, front row and center as a superdelegate, and having endorsed Secretary Clinton. And thank you so much for your ears. We appreciate it. Hope you have a great week. Maria Sanchez saying goodbye.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.